Well, this hour we'll take your phone calls with David Bloom as we talk about his work. Alcohol can be a gas. Also, we'll talk about food, too. And welcome back to Coast, David Bloom with us. We'll get to your phone calls as well and share your stories about your interesting energy stories that you might have. I bet people have a lot of those kind of stories, David.
Well, they do, George. There's all kind of ways that alcohol has come to be used. One of the ways that people almost never hear about is cooking. You know, boat owners have known that alcohol is a good, you know, fuel on boats because it has no emissions, there's no smoke from it, and if it has a, if you have a fire, you can put an alcohol fire out with water, which tends to be around boats, you know. So that works out pretty well, but it turns out that half the population of the world cooks their food over an open fire with wood or charcoal indoors.
Indoors. That's a fire hazard waiting to happen, isn't it?
Oh, well, I wish the fire hazard was the big deal. Imagine breathing all that smoke.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Yeah. So 4 million women a year die from lung-related disease, and kids, too, from breathing wood smoke while cooking indoors. That's half the population of the world. Well, you can imagine with all that wood being used for cooking, the trees are disappearing. So deforestation is totally connected to cooking. You can't blame people for wanting to cook their food, but they also shouldn't have to die while they cook.
No, that's right. When you're pumping gasoline and you smell the fumes from the gasoline, is that bad for you?
Oh, gosh. Well, let's see. You know, regular gasoline is about 30% benzene, toluene, and xylene. So benzene is the kind of chemical where if you spill a teaspoon on a factory floor, they evacuate the building.
And oh, you're the guys kidding.
Oh, no. Benzene is one of the most carcinogenic substances known. Now, xylene and toluene, the other two things, are highly related to benzene. They're all really toxic. And premium gas has 41% of the fuel is benzene, toluene, or xylene, or BTX. And if any other industry made this stuff, it would be considered a toxic waste, and you'd have to pay a lot of money to get rid of it.
So once you start pumping, get away from it, right?
Absolutely. Don't breathe anything coming out of your car, and don't be around any gasoline spilled on the ground. So, you know, we're paying the oil companies to get rid of their toxic waste, and it's about half of what the oil was coming out of the ground when they make plastic or nylons or linoleum or whatever. Whatever's left over is thrown together and called gasoline. It's toxic waste. And if they had to pay to get rid of it, they'd go broke in a day or two. You know, it's just
too much. Mm-hmm. Too much. Let's go west of the Rockies. Susanna's with us from San Luis Obispo in California. Hi, Susanna. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call. Your guest struck a nerve.
What happened?
In Richmond, California. I lived there 20 years. It's a very, very, very difficult area economically and all the above, but Chevron is not their friend.
Oh, no. No, Chevron's tried to make Richmond a company town for 100 years, and the current
You know, she carries 90,000 people, between 85 and 90,000 people consistently.
Yes.
Over her, I think it's 80 square miles of landmass, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
Chevron has absolutely penetrated to the very bottom of the barrel of the toxic waste and fumes in the air.
Oh, yeah.
And they cover it up and cover it up and cover it up. And they do not, less than 8% of their employees are black. That's sad. You know, that's very sad considering the ratio of people they employ. But the toxicity that they put in that city is off the charts.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And David, let me ask you about this. Have there been any studies or reports of higher incidence of cancer in that area or anything like that?
Oh, all around the world, downwind of a refinery is a whole cancer corridor. In Richmond, they had an explosion a few years ago, which 15,000 people were exposed to horribly toxic chemicals,
oh, gosh.
And Chevron refused to consider paying anyone damages for that. And so what happened? The city of Richmond started eminent domaining their land in retaliation. So there's a war going on between the government of Richmond and Chevron. And I happened to go to a meeting there of the Council of Industry, all the top, you know, business people in Richmond. And the guy from Chevron said, I'm such and such from Chevron, the dark side. So Chevron is, you know, it's a two-edged sword for us, though, because we want to sell Chevron alcohol from our Richmond plant, because alcohol mixed with gasoline reduces the emissions dramatically from the tailpipe.
And what percent are we talking? 5%?
No, much more than that. If you put in 15% alcohol, you can reduce. Now, the three big pollutants, you know, from a car is carbon monoxide, hydrocarbons, and then nitrous oxide.
And the worst, of course, is carbon monoxide, obviously.
Well, that one's immediately fatal. That's Dr. Kevorkian's death gas.
You
right?
breathe that in, and it's history for you.
But the hydrocarbons give you emphysema and lung cancer. So, you know, so alcohol reduces both of those dramatically. In my Ford Ranger, where I put in alcohol in my tank, I have zero hydrocarbons, zero carbon monoxide, and only 4 parts per million nitrous oxides, and I'm allowed 400. So alcohol in my tank makes me 99% cleaner in nitrous oxides and infinitely cleaner in the other two, because I have nothing to measure. So alcohol is an incredibly clean fuel, and when we use it, as I mentioned earlier, in cook stoves, in places that use wood, there's no soot, nothing dangerous to breathe.
And then let me ask you this. Any studies that would show the incidence of cancer associated with workers at some of these plants?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, it's very hazardous to work at an oil refinery because there's always emissions that are coming from leaks. And there can be up to one refinery I remember a study from. It was a Chevron refinery. It was 500,000 gallons of gasoline basically leaked every year, either as vapor or liquid in one refinery. And remember, a large percentage of gasoline, which is the waste product from refining, is incredibly toxic.
I bet. Let's go to Richard in London, Ontario, in Canada. Hi, Rich. Go ahead.
Hi, George. How are you tonight?
Good, Richard. Thank you.
Yeah, I'd like to say a comment first and then ask a question.
Sure.
If I may.
Yes, you may.
Okay, thank you. First of all, I was very, very sick drinking water, just tap water from the sink, and the doctors didn't know what to do. It raised up my blood pressure, everything. I just went chaos. They did studies and blood tests, blood work. They found out eventually that it was the water, that I was allergic to something. So I went to a reverse osmosis system after I did a lot of studies into the water system, and I couldn't believe. I spoke to some people, and I went on the internet, of course, and everything else, and I actually spoke to some people at the university on this subject. And they said that it's so bad, or water, even after the treatment, when they do embalming, I mean, people with cancer diseases, it goes right into the water system.
No.
For sure. Now, how do you treat that? I mean, we can only treat it to a certain
point. Yeah, I was going to say, can you treat it at all?
No, it's part of the DNA, and this is something people should know. Now, my question is, I did get a reverse osmosis system, and I'm feeling much better now.
That's great.
But it takes everything out. Now, I'm losing a lot of minerals and stuff, but I
supplements, just, supplements, Richard.
Supplements, that's
George,
what I'm doing,
right.
George.
You need to take mineral supplements, yeah.
Right. So my question is it safe to just be on a reverse osmosis?
Well, not by itself. Like you say, there's no minerals left in it, and biologically, all of our bodies need a bunch of minerals to operate properly. So, you know, there are all kinds of good complex mineral supplements that you should take, you know, most of them will work just fine. You can also use a little sea salt in your cooking, which gets a lot of minerals in. But the idea is that you got to put the things in that your body needs to make chemical reactions happen. Tiny amounts of different materials are what you need. And unfortunately, reverse osmosis takes them all out. But you know where I come from? Basically, what I say is if you want to get yourself out of a hole, well, the first thing to do is to stop digging. So when it comes to poisons in our water, let's stop these guys from, you know, emitting things that end up in our water. And that's, you know, that's where, and superfoods, you know, now I'm not going to tell you which superfoods are better or not, but I'm working with a company in Brazil right now, and I'm not promoting a particular superfood, but it's called the Baru nut. Now, it's kind of like what we have in California, which are, you know, almonds. So the almonds is interesting because the outer part of the almond is a fleshy material. And then there's the hard shell, and then the seeds are inside. And that's the way it is with almonds. We have what we call almond hulls in California, the leathery, you know, fleshy outside that's full of sugar. Now, that's important because sugar we can make into alcohol. Well, this Baru nut is in Brazil, covers like an area that's pretty much three times the size of Texas. And we can ferment all that fleshy stuff on the outside. But when we make alcohol, we also make carbon dioxide, pound for pound. A pound of alcohol, we make a pound of carbon dioxide. So we're working with Phase 5 Energy and Darren Olin of a superfood company to go ahead and crack these nuts using the byproducts from making alcohol from the flesh. So that's how I like to do things. I say, well, you know, the problem is the solution. You've got this stuff you're getting rid of on the outside of the nut. Well, let's make alcohol from that and use the co-products from the alcohol to solve other problems in your process. So anyway, those guys were here the other day, and they went through our research greenhouse, which is pretty interesting. And they made some YouTube videos, which just got posted today, I think. And if you look it up under David Bloom or Professor Moonshine, you'll find some very interesting videos about what we do here at the Alcohol Can Be a Gas facility, where we make not just alcohol, but things like cattail starch, and we raise fish on the byproducts, and we grow turmeric and other kinds of crops with the byproducts from making alcohol. So, you know, you want to go to our website because we do have tours from time to time. And if you sign up on our mailing list, you can find out when we're having one of our 2 or 3 hour tours that show this whole process of using everything from whatever we're making. And you can find us at alcoholcanbeagas.com or Bloom Distillation. And we occasionally post public tours that people can attend and see how alcohol is made and see how the byproducts can be squeezed out of everything to make enough food for everyone and good food.
Are there any major oil companies getting involved in this in their own mass production of ethanol and things like that?
Valero. Valero is not really an oil company. They don't own oil in the ground, but they do have refineries, and they have been proactive in buying alcohol factories in the Midwest where they make alcohol to add to their refined product, because everywhere now adds alcohol to the gasoline. One of the reasons why is it's cheaper than gasoline. You can make alcohol for a much lower price, and so this one company, Valero, said, wow, we can make more money if we add alcohol, and now we save money on the total volume of fuel, and it's cleaner and everybody likes it. So that's the one oil company that I know of that actually has embraced alcohol. The other ones fight it tooth and nail and have for 100 years.
Let's go to Bruce in Jacksonville, Florida. First-time caller for us. Hi, Bruce. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing, Bruce.
I wanted to ask your guest about his ideas behind the higher level of ethanol or alcohol and gasoline above the 10% that we do now. I know for a fact that stuff is eating up fuel lines on the older vehicles that don't have stainless steel or that kind of quality fuel line.
Well, let me interject right away here.
All right, go ahead, Dave.
Tom and I went to the Ford factory where they put together all the pickup trucks, and we went through the whole assembly of the fuel system for trucks, from the gas tank to the fuel pump in the tank to the fuel lines and all the way up to the cap. And we went there with the shop foreman, and we said, well, we see here the three different models of truck, you know, 150, 250, 350 bins with parts in them. Well, where's the bin for the flex fuel truck, the one that has to resist all this corrosion you're talking about?
Right.
You know, there aren't any other parts. And we went down the assembly line every time. Where's the alcohol one, you know? And we finally get all the way up to the cab, and we said, okay, we haven't found any parts that you did different for alcohol for all this supposed corrosion and rubber damage and all that. What is different about a flex fuel or alcohol and gasoline vehicle versus gasoline alone? He goes, oh, software. You know, and we Tom was filming all this while we did it, right? And once we got that last comment, well, we quick packed up and we started heading for the door, and the guy goes, I'm not sure I was supposed to tell you that. Tom goes, oh, don't worry, everything's just fine. And we hustled our way out of Ford and drove off before anybody could stop us and take our tape back, because there were oil companies on the board of Ford, right? You know, and somebody was really worried that they were admitting that there are no differences in materials between an alcohol-capable vehicle and a gasoline one. And that's been true since 1983. It's just a myth the oil companies promote to make you nervous about putting it in your car, and that's all it takes to get you not to do it, is be nervous. Now, we're doing something that's really radical now. We're running diesel engines on alcohol.
That is a first, isn't it?
It's a total first. Everyone says you can't do that. And so, what we're doing right now is our local... in Watsonville here, our local school district is having us trial one of their buses running on our special alcohol formula. It's alcohol and other renewable things, non-toxic things that are, because alcohol by itself is tricky to run in a diesel. So we have other stuff we've added that we can make in our factory here. So they're running it right now. And why do they care so much? Well, think about it. You're in a bus, you're, 7 years old, and the bus stops for some of your friends, and the doors open, and the bus is still running, and the windows are down, everybody's throwing paper out the window at the guy getting on the bus and stuff, you know. And all that diesel smoke is coming in your windows and in the door, and kids are breathing it. It's not a good situation.
Good point.
Diesel smoke is really rough. And so what we're doing here is replacing in school buses the most vulnerable population, kids, with a safe fuel, which has pretty harmless emissions in comparison to diesel. So now here's the thing that really drives me nuts, George. The software that runs the fuel injection on diesel engines is opaque. The companies keep it secret. And so...
So you can't adjust it.
Well, we can't adjust it. You're right on the money, George. So I'm asking all the truck drivers out there tonight who are, listening to the show, I need to find a hotshot diesel programmer, maybe one of the guys that soups up those over-the-road tractor trailers without the trailer, that race those big 500-horsepower cabs around the track, and I need to find the guy that people use for modifying the program.
Ah, that's smart. We're coming back with final phone calls with David Bloom right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, are there artificial structures on Mars? Stick around for that program. We're going to have some fascinating things coming. Well, we've got our first luncheon series coming up in February. It's Tuesday, Feb 13th. If you live in the Los Angeles area, circle your calendar. And then send an email to lunchwithgeorge@gmail.com. Include your phone number. Our lunch is with Dr. Sky Stephen Cates. We're going to have some fun talking to him about space and astronomy. lunchwithgeorge@gmail.com. And welcome back to Coast, David Bloom with us. We'll get to your calls as well. Next hour, we're talking about strange things happening on Mars. So, David, tell us your next plan. What are you doing next these days?
Well, it's great you mentioned Mars, George, because NASA has come out to my facility, and they have figured out that the only fuel they want on Mars is alcohol.
Uh-huh.
None of that oil stuff for them. So they also figured out...
They may be able to produce it on Mars.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? That's why they came to me. So they also figured out that if you tried to ship food to Mars for the research team that's going to go live there, it's $10,000 a gram.
Wow.
And there's 28 grams in an ounce. So, you know, basically it's really expensive to send food. So it makes more sense to send seeds. So when they came and investigated my place, what they saw was our greenhouse that's totally connected to the alcohol plant. So when we ferment the sugars to make alcohol, we make carbon dioxide. Well, that's kind of like the carbon dioxide all the researchers will be breathing out.
And the plants love that stuff, don't they?
And plants love that stuff. So into the greenhouse it goes and produces all this wonderful food. But they need, you know, Mars soil is sterile right now, and plants need biology in the soil. So they looked at our soil, which, you know, had been totally sterile before we took over these greenhouses. It was a flower industry. And they saw that we recycled the gases, we made oxygen, which would go back into the habitat. And of course, the food would be produced from seeds. And like we all saw in The Martian, you know, the movie The Martian, you know, you could do it if you set it up right. And so when they finished with the tour of our greenhouses, they basically said, well, we really want you to design the food production for Mars. And they had lunch with us, and I said, you know, they said to us, well, what are they going to eat? And we said, well, do you like this lunch you're eating? And they go, oh, it's a fabulous lunch, you know. We said, all that came out of the greenhouse you were just in. And so your astronauts will eat organic food just like this. And they'll eat shrimp, lobster.
Jeez.
And they'll have fish, you know, all as part of the byproducts left over from making alcohol and are processing all the waste from all the scientists, their breath, their sewage, everything. And you'll have a closed system. You're going to need a little better greenhouse than I have, you know, because a little tougher conditions, but that's all we need. And they said, well, we want you to do it. And I said, well, you realize, of course, that whenever I do a consultation, I want a site visit.
Yeah. And off the Mars you go, David.
Yeah, they had a laugh about that.
See you in about 6 years, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we are doing a conference about turning waste into fuel. Not our conference, we're attending it. The Energy Utility and Environment Conference in San Diego, an area that you know well, March 5th to the 7th. And if you're a municipal leader of any sort or a Department of Public Works guy, you really need to be at this conference. And it's a great place to talk with me, and maybe, George, you could, come for a visit if you're not too busy at that time.
We'll check our schedule with Thomas,
yeah,
see where I may be.
But I guess what I want to say is if people want more information, which we usually rush at the end, you can get our book, Alcohol Can Be a Gas, and we have a toll-free for that, 888-737-6228. And you go to our website, bloomdistillation.com, and you'll see what people have done to participate with us. We have 90 wonderful investors that are backing our business to go ahead and start putting in plants all over the Western United States and in other countries. And so it's an interesting story, which you can read all about on the Bloom Distillation website.
All right, now back to the phones we go. Let's go to Alex in Austin, Texas, Wildcard Line. Hello, Alex. Good morning.
Hey, thank you so much, George. I wanted to thank you for all you do.
Well, thank you.
First-time caller, actually, but a long-time listener. I had a question for Dave, and he kind of touched on it with a previous caller, but I want to make sure I kind of get this straight and give him a chance to touch on it, and that is I've used alcohol primarily through E85.
Yes.
Blending it with fuel in the past, usually about 30 to 40%. I know you mentioned 30, no, there's no modification needed.
Yes.
Here's my question. On the more recent vehicles, about 2015 Ford, they're telling people, especially with Ford products, that you're not supposed to use alcohol of any kind in your fuel system because it theoretically it'll damage the fuel system and not be covered under warranty, yada, yada, yada.
Actually, so, that's absolutely not true, and I've been to the Ford World headquarters and in the factory and talked to the engineers and actually helped design things for them, and I can tell you that that's not the case. You can run in most modern cars 50% alcohol without any modifications. 30% is piece of cake. Everything can run on that, even carbureted cars. But no, there's nothing since 1983 that is liable to be damaged by alcohol in any vehicle today. It was back when we first started putting alcohol in the fuel, the car companies switched over because they didn't want warranty problems, and we've never had to go back.
And when you say they switched over to what?
There was a rubber that they used to use called nitrile rubber, and it was swell when alcohol would be in the fuel.
Ah, okay.
And now they use Viton and other things, and it's absolutely impervious to alcohol. So there's really that is an oil company myth that's been propagated for decades, and it just is meant to get you nervous so you won't use alcohol.
Let's go to Wayne in Chicago, Illinois. Hello, Wayne.
Hey, thank you, George.
Sure thing, sir.
Yes, I just want to say, Mr. Bloom, your knowledge about how to use energy efficiently is just absolutely incredible. I just love when you come on the show.
Well, thank you.
Yes, I have a couple of questions. The first one is, have you heard of this more than 11 quintillion barrels of zero emissions hydrogen gas discovered off New Brunswick in Canada?
Wow, hydrogen in that quantity in Canada, is it underground or something? Because I haven't heard of it.
I think it's off the coast of Canada. They say it's enough fuel to supply the world's energy needs for a millennium.
Wow. Okay, I think I know what you're talking about. There's off the coast of Canada and actually other countries too, at the bottom of the ocean,
mm-hmm.
there's stuff called methane hydrate. And methane is natural gas, and it's like a combination of methane and ice. And it's, you know, it's at the bottom of the ocean around different continents. And if the water of the ocean warms up even a little bit more, that stuff will start to float up, and you could have 500 years of global climate change in like a week if that stuff starts bursting to the surface.
Well, and here's what they say, Wayne. This was a 2002 story. It says hydrogen found in Earth's crust is limitless fuel, natural hydrogen, and it is everywhere from North America, extending from Canada, all over the place.
And what form is it in, George?
It's in a gas form.
I have one more question.
Wow. Okay. I had no idea.
All right. Go ahead, Wayne.
George, I know you remember the show One Step Beyond.
You love that show.
Okay, George, episode of that show.
I know which one you're going to talk about, the guy with the little pill, right?
Right. He was a scientist. He went to the United States Navy Defense Department. He said, give me $10 million. Here's the secret to not having to use fossil fuels. And he added a little water to it. He put it in the engine, and the engine ran. And he took his $10 million and disappeared. I wanted this Mr. Bloom know, what was that chemical that he put into that engine?
And it was, he put a little pill in the water that converted it. Remember that, David?
I have heard this story.
You were too young when that show was out.
No, I've heard that story. I've never been able to run down the source of it or what it was supposed to be. It ranks up there with the too good to be true stories, you know, but
we always wondered whether it was a true story or not.
I have never seen any evidence that that it was anything other than an urban legend.
What a great story, though. Huh?
It was a great story.
Next up, we go to Jerry in Baroness Springs, Virginia. Hi, Jerry. Go ahead.
Yes. How are you?
Good. Good to have you with us.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to make a, or well, I guess I could ask a question. I've heard, though, the more alcohol that is in the fuel, the less gas mileage you get.
Up to a point that's true. In other words, if you have E85, which is sold at the pump in thousands of stations, that's 85% alcohol, you'll typically lose 10 or 12% miles per gallon in some cases. But alcohol is 106 octane. So if you have a high compression engine, like an older vehicle from the muscle car days, or what they're beginning to build right now in Detroit for the future, because there's going to be new 100 octane fuel at the pump, you will now get up to 22% better mileage than you do on gasoline. So if you take advantage of the qualities of the fuel, which we're going to be able to soon with the newer vehicles, you'll actually get quite a bit better mileage than you will with gasoline. So the answer is yes, but right now, gasoline-oriented cars lose 10 or 12%, but the cost of the fuel is so low that it's still totally worth it. And you have a clean conscience with no emissions.
Bill is in Munger, Michigan. Bill, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to heat my house with alcohol, if possible. I have a fuel oil furnace, and I already have the tanks, but it's like I need to know what I can do to actually build a still, or do you guys have stills that are, like, available? Or
and what one small enough for you to use yourself. The book that I wrote, Alcohol Can Be Gas, tells exactly how to do that. You might have that book in your local library, and you can look it up, or you can find it on Amazon, or you can give us a call at the number I gave earlier to buy a book. But it tells you how to build a 100-gallon per day still, which, you know, you only need it a couple, 3 days a month. And alcohol will work in a fuel oil burner generally with no adjustments and no modification. Now, some of the older fuel oil burners need a few modifications, and we're at the end of the show, so I'm not going to get into a big tech discussion, but look it up in the book. It tells you how to adjust your fuel oil burner. There's no incompatibility between a burner meant for fuel oil and one for alcohol. You can just use it, and you can even get water heaters that run on the same technology as your house heater, you know, liquid fuel to heat water versus liquid fuel to heat your house, and the same kind of burner is used in those water heaters. So, you can do almost everything with alcohol you want.
So, David, hydrogen is, you know, in water, of course.
Yes.
Why can't we use water then with some kind of special engine that would extract the hydrogen and use it as fuel?
You know, that sounds like a great idea, George, but the energy that is combined, the oxygen and hydrogen together, they are really tightly bonded together. The amount of energy you need to break them apart is more than you'll get out of burning the hydrogen after.
It's way too much, though. Okay.
So it's, you know, there have been a couple of tricky things with catalysts that, like Brown's gas, et cetera, that actually look like they could work under the right circumstances. And, of course, everybody says, oh, you can't do anything like that. But I don't actually buy it that you can't do that. I think it's, when you look at the catalysts that make Brown's gas, it's almost like a subatomic reaction. It's not like a chemical reaction. And I think Brown's gas has some merit, even though I haven't made it myself.
Let's go to Steve in Montana, first-time caller. Steven, go ahead.
Yes, I had an issue that alcohol actually solved for me. Namely, I used to get terribly sick when I go out in the woods and cut my own firewood.
Sure.
Because the chainsaw exhaust right in my face.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, horrible.
And so they told me to just buy a new chainsaw, and I did that, and same problem.
Right.
So I looked it up, and I switched using 100% pure alcohol mixed with castor oil, and all I had to do was take my old chainsaw and adjust the needles, and I don't get sick anymore.
That's correct.
I love that story.
You're exactly right. In other countries in the world, like in Norway and Sweden and in Brazil, people don't use two-stroke gasoline anymore. They use alcohol.
What about lawnmowers?
Lawnmowers are actually just a turn of the screw, and you don't even need to put castor oil in because those are four-stroke engines. And really, just turning the air-fuel mixture screw on the simple carburetor is enough. But very few people have tried what you're trying, and absolutely it's true that the sickening smoke from the two-stroke engine, which is five times as much as a car, you know, that little chainsaw compared to a car, is very toxic, and you had a understandable reaction to it.
I wonder how many people over the years, Steve, David, have gotten sick from fumes like that?
Well, the number of people who've died from breathing benzene and toluene and stuff from gasoline, numbers in the hundreds of thousands, and that's just in L.A. alone. So basically, that's where the studies have been done, and it's an appalling number of people who have ultimately been killed by the chemicals in gasoline.
All right, David, keep in touch with us, my friend, and keep doing what you're doing, okay?
Thanks, George, and great to talk with you again.
David Blum. Websites are all linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, we're going to be talking about something going on Mars with two special guests. You're going to love the program. Then in the final hour, of course, we'll open up the phone lines and give you an opportunity to ask them a question or two as well. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.